Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And surprise, surprise, if you're a federal worker who was considered non-essential as of Friday, you probably thought you're going to have today off, but you're at work today, but at least you're getting paid. So congratulations on that. And Jim, obviously, that'll be the start of our conversation today with the good martini. It seemed as of Friday night that not much progress was being made, but lo and behold, a couple hours before the midnight deadline that would have quote-unquote shut down the government, we got this from House Speaker John Boehner.
I'm pleased that Senator Reid and I and the White House have been able to come to an agreement that will, in fact, cut spending and keep our government open.
Plenty of reaction on winners and losers, how this shakes out for the long term and so forth. I'm kind of on mixed feelings on this one, Jim, but leaning towards the positive, I'll start, though, with why I think this could have been better. The fact that they only went after non-defense discretionary spending. They didn't try to go after waste and fraud inside defense spending. They didn't try to tackle mandatory spending at all. Clearly, they'll do that with the new budget. The good news is, though, they got more than the Democrats even a few days ago were willing to think that they would concede on. And, of course, I think that since Boehner did get more than most people expected him to get, that sets the table well for the much larger debate over 2012 and moving forward. I'm not thrilled that the funding for Planned Parenthood and the health care plan are going to be separate bills because I don't think they have a chance in the Senate. But overall, better than we thought it was going to be, and it sets up pretty well for the 2012 budget debate.
Well, Greg, if you hear yelling in the background, that's Andy McCarthy pounding on the door saying that this should be our bad martini. He in the corner was pretty darn irate about this. He thinks that Boehner and congressional Republicans have sold out the grassroots once again, that $40 billion is a piddling amount in terms of the scale of the problems. The Republicans should have, I guess, fought harder would be the way he'd put it. And I see where he's coming from. The argument I'd like to put to him and any listeners out there and any readers out there who are adamant that the Republicans should have dug in their heels and they should not have been afraid of a government shutdown, or they should, this was their time, their moment to fight and draw a line in the sand. If you do that and the government shuts down, and let's presume that there's no last-minute deal to ensure that the troops get paid. So right now we have fighting in three fronts, two wars and one kinetic military action, and our guys are not getting paid. And then, of course, you assume the public will stay with the Republicans. And at this point, it looked like the public polling said, well, okay, it's pox on both your houses. If the public doesn't stay on the Republican side, let's say, after a week, after 2 weeks, you start seeing people saying, oh, just cut a deal, get the government open. You Republicans are being obstinate and unreasonable and unrealistic. Then what? I haven't heard anything from folks about what Republicans do if they lose the messaging battle, which, let's face it, it's a harder message to sell, which is a government can't be all things to all people. What do you do then? I mean, do you just take the lumps until your approval rating is down to 10%? Do you give, you have a 1 week period to keep the government shut down? Do you have a 2 week period? I really didn't see any good coherent strategy for winning a shutdown, or at least for a good probability of winning a shutdown. So I think this is probably the best deal the Republicans could get under the circumstances. We got to remember they didn't have an unlimited amount of leverage, and they got two more bites at the apple with the vote to raise the debt ceiling and the 2012 budget. And I think you can see big cuts in both of those. Unfortunately, we don't have the Senate and we don't have the presidency, and that kind of limits what you can do in terms of cutting government. If anybody's got some ingenious plan, I think not only am I all ears, I like to think that John Boehner is all tan ears.
Oh, wow. Jim, just to follow up on a couple of points that I guess Andy made and that you responded to, and I certainly understand where both of you are coming from. I think it is true that the overall amount that eventually got cut from the rest of this current fiscal year ultimately isn't going to make a huge difference. But again, like we said before, it does set the stage well for the next time. And as far as the government shutdown, I don't think anybody really wanted one. I think a lot of conservatives were a little bit puzzled as to why the conservatives led by Boehner were so insistent on publicly saying that there would never be one. They absolutely would do everything possible not to have one. To have it kind of out there as a card to force even more of the Dems might have been a better tactic. But in the end, we still got more than what we thought the Democrats were willing to relent on. So as one member of Congress told me last week, this debate now is about how much to cut, not if to cut. And that is a step in the right direction, even if we're not going to see the big fight for a few more weeks here. So on to number two now, and on the Sunday morning chat shows, obviously the fiscal health of our country was a major topic of conversation from network to network. The president's campaign manager, David Plouffe, was on Fox News Sunday, and he spoke with Chris Wallace, obviously. Here's the exchange they had about Obama suddenly realizing that, oh, maybe I do need to address entitlements. And, of course, here's how he's going to pay for it.
And what about taxes? Is he going to raise taxes?
Well, first of all, his budget for this year says for upper-income Americans, he does believe that they need to contribute to the deficit reduction in this country. Listen, the congressional Republican...
So basically you're going back to rescinding the Bush tax cuts
for the wealthy.
And then Wallace immediately followed up by saying, well, that'll never get through a Republican-controlled House, so here's how the bad martini gets worse.
Speaker Boehner said in an interview that he's not going to take revenues off the table. There's a bipartisan group of senators in the Senate where clearly they're talking about revenues. So I think the president's belief is this has to be a balanced approach. And if we do that, we can get deficit reduction in this country.
So it's kind of a two-pronged head here on the bad martini, Jim. One, big surprise, the president wants to soak the rich to try and get closer to fiscal solvency. And number two, it looks like he may have at least a few people on Capitol Hill on the right side of the aisle who might be willing to entertain the prospect.
Everyone who goes into deficit reduction talk should be saying everything's on the table, whether or not everything is actually on the table. By the way, that had better be a very strong table if everything is indeed on it. If there was a super duper unbelievable way of cutting all kinds of expenditures, and it included entitlement reform and it included means testing and it included everything that conservatives wanted, and in exchange, the top tax bracket would have to pay 1% higher taxes, would you take that deal? You know, right now, Grover Norquist and Americans for Tax Reform are drawing swords over the notion. They probably would say, no, no, no. Republicans were put on this earth to cut taxes. They were put on earth to never raise taxes, and that would be a sellout. But if you got enough spending cuts in other areas, it's not inconceivable that a deal like that might be worthwhile. But we all know that these Democrats aren't going to offer this. By the way, I love the gumption, I guess I should say, the audacity of this president. First of all, like 3 weeks ago, he agreed to extend the Bush tax cuts for 2 years.
Right.
And now he's saying, never mind, let's undo that. Let's, you know, remember that big concession I made for that huge bipartisan deal just 3 months ago? Yeah, let's undo that. I don't really want to give you the concession that I made. And then the second thing is he really thinks that a Republican-held House is going to raise taxes when Democrats weren't willing to do it?
Yeah, good luck
really?
With that. Good luck with that.
I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, there's, you know, the old joke that there's two explanations. Either the president is stupid or he thinks everybody else is stupid. I think he really thinks John Boehner is unbelievably foolish if he really thinks that, you know, Boehner would basically give a version of the George H.W. Bush, read my lips, no new taxes, breaking that promise.
Yeah, there's no
can't imagine that's going to be the case. Once again, you and I will have issues about whether something should be good martini or bad martini. I kind of like Obama pushing for tax hikes heading into the presidential reelection campaign. I think that just kind of reminds people this is who he is. This is what he wants. His vision is that of a larger government. I think later this week he'll probably go down to the IRS offices and watch all the mail coming in, all the checks from Americans, and just jump up and down like it's Christmas morning. That's just the kind of president I think Barack Obama is. So this is not actually look, let's let the public see who Obama is, and that is at his heart, he wants taxes to go up again and again and again.
Jim, I know you've been shocked all weekend by the prospect that the president might use the class warfare card in trying to win re-election. I can't imagine that was in the arsenal.
No, it's a surprise move, yeah.
Speaking of the president and speaking of his weekend, he actually wasn't on the golf course, at least for a little while on Saturday. Instead, he sprinted up the steps of the Lincoln Memorial to basically try and take credit for the fact that the tourists could still be there on Saturday.
Because Congress was able to settle its differences, that's why this place is open today and everybody's able to enjoy their visit. And that's the kind of future cooperation I hope we have going forward.
That's right. He's the adult in the room. Jim, all the others were just bickering children, and finally he got them to agree.
Thank you. And you with the Park Service, could you please get that large statue out of my chair? that's supposed to be for me. I am the great emancipator. I am the great unifier. I am the greatest president in history. That's what all these people here are clapping for me. The government is open because of my wisdom, because of my great, you know, vision and ability to unify people. Let's see. In fact, you know what? That big pointy thing in the middle of the mall, replace that. I just want a giant statue of me golfing. Yeah, we shouldn't be surprised. This is what this president does. But it is kind of, you know, like, in a way, it's like it's a great picture, you know. He does look great. I just think there's probably a lot of Americans probably are a little wary of, you know, this is, you don't see the Time and Newsweek covers comparing him to FDR and Lincoln and George Washington and every other greatest president anymore. You haven't seen too many of those, have you, Greg?
Not a lot, no.
Yeah, it's almost as if things aren't turning out the way he promised.
Yeah, big
you know, it's there. Look, we should expect. Hey, look, you know, I guess the other thing is we should just be glad he's staying in the district this weekend.
That was a change of policy. I think you're very close to what the president wants to see on the mall. I think he wants to replace the Lincoln Memorial with a statue of him addressing the ball on the tee and then turn the Washington Monument into a giant flagstick. So make it a par 3.
There you go.
Over water.
Call it the National Green.
Exactly right. Jim, quite a weekend. Let's hope we have some fun stuff to talk about the rest of the week as well.
I think it's very likely, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Very good. Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.